This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is sponsored by Dipsy and Raycon.
This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, then you can click the YouTube link in our show notes and gaze along as we talk our shiznits. Inner Ho Uprising. Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, a podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist hoe who lives in New York City, who wears a mask when she sees other people in person these days, and is still down with the motherfucking resistance.
And me, Rodeca, a fat, black, non-monogamous, existentialist femme whose life is a series of coincidences that somehow landed her here, and my pronouns are she and her.
Ooh, my pronouns are she and her too, I forgot about that.
And Akua, pronouns she and her, who is an excited hoe that got a fifth little bite in the package.
Yes. Look at the universe, or like God, the Orishas, the ancestors.
They blessed me that day.
Was on your side.
That's real.
We truly love to see that.
That's real.
Every episode of the Inner Ho Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely little bite-eating rotating co-hosts talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. This episode, we're talking about the splendor of merging self-love and artistic ventures, how mattress sex can get you paid. That's right, you. Gene-edited babies, and what happens when white women tell stories about black women's traumatic histories.
If you would like to follow along with the conversation had on this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag Inner Ho Uprising so we can see it, and the hashtag Podin so other people can see it.
And if you would like to follow us in social media, you can do so at Inner Ho Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inner Ho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inner Ho Uprising, CUMMUNITY. Head to innerhouprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, pay a ho, or check out our merchandise.
And if you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, we would love to do that. We would also love to host a consent, pleasure, or dating workshop for your organization. So to book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. Now we're going to get started with one of our first segments, which is one of our favorite segments because y'all are near and dear to our hearts. It is called Ho of the Week. It is where we shout out the homies who have supported Inner Ho Uprising in the past week. Hoes of the Week get special nicknames, and the game, if they choose to participate, is to guess the meaning behind their nicknames. We have Kiana A, aka My Shot, who donated some money in the PayPal, and we have Apple Podcast reviewers Kelsey Craft 98, who wrote, "I was recently referred by someone who I followed on Instagram, and I couldn't be more happy. It's so important to have a podcast that talks about sex and social issues with a variety of perspectives. Thank you all for your work. Love, love, love." Thank you, Kelsey.
Thank you.
We have L. Nell Draw, who wrote, "Wow, wow, 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 wow."
You love to see it. Yes, what better review than that?
We love a good five wow, five star review. Thank you, L. Nell Draw. And finally, we have 237BQBE, who wrote, "Very black, very smart." I love those two phrases.
Yep.
Though I always don't know a lot coming into each episode, I leave more knowledgeable and empathetic. I admire how the hosts share their great and not so great experiences and aren't afraid to admit their shortcomings. If you want to be a better, more well-rounded person, you're in the right place.
Wow.
Fucking affirming. Fucking affirming. Those are all the kinds of things that I want to be and put out there in the world. How about you guys?
Same.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you guys. Reminder that if you are a Apple Podcast reviewer who wants a nickname, you have to leave a first name so I have some fodder to create your nickname. If in general you'd like to be a Ho of the Week and get a cool nickname, here are some additional things you can do. Well, you can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, as we just mentioned. You can feature us in an article you've written on any publication, or shout us out on social media. These are some non-monetary ways that you can support the Inner Ho Uprising podcast. We love both monetary and non-monetary support, and we understand that in these uncertain times, Monetary support is not feasible for many, many folks. Please do not spend your last dollars on us. Put you and yours first, and we truly mean that. If you can spare us some change, however, you can donate to us on PayPal at paypal.me/innerhope. You can become a patron on patreon.com/innerhope uprising, or you can purchase some merchandise at innerhope uprising.com/merchandise, links to all of which are in the show notes. And a reminder that if you do become a patron on Patreon, for $2 a month, you can participate in things like our Slack chat, our patron-only film nights, and for $5 a month, you can join our Monday night Zoom hangouts. And at any patron tier, you have access to our episodes a few days early, entry to our workshops and parties, and entry to our pre-recording specials. How was our pre-recording special today, guys?
It was lit.
I was at an older Black woman's house drinking mimosas, so I was unable to attend. I'm so sorry. But it was
real life.
It was a good time.
Yeah.
We were talking about Lovecraft Country, which I which I have not
no,
seen.
No, it's actually Cumtree. It's a HBO's bringing pornos back.
Straight up. Well, Cumtree was apparently a really good show, and I'm frequently talking about how I don't have the attention span, but since it's only one episode and tonight's the second one, I feel like I can jump in and really feel like a part of modern society.
Yay.
So we were talking about that and a lot of other shows.
Right.
And
medical shows. We were talking about the Check It.
LGBTQ gang. Yeah, there you go. Check It gang. Yeah, who runs DC. Didn't know that was a thing, but apparently
I don't even know what you guys are talking about.
Yeah. There's a gang in DC that, like, they don't let anybody fuck with them. Apparently a video just surfaced
of
about,
the woman,
like,
of the woman fighting that nigga.
Yeah.
A transphobic nigga.
Exactly.
And she, and like, that, hit him one time and he fell.
And that's the gang. Like, everybody knows not to fuck with them. And, like, if you say any ignorant shit, like, they will fight you. And that's, like, a thing in D.C. And everybody knows them, apparently. So I was like, oh, I didn't know that. They have a documentary.
Everything.
What's the documentary called?
It's called Check It. We're watching it.
Oh, should we do a patron only film night?
Yeah, that's fun. See? Look at this, guys. You could be a part of it if you become a patron.
There you go. That was all an elaborate ad. I actually was there.
They didn't know it was a full
I wasn't at a fucking Black woman's house drinking mimosas. No, I actually was. That's really cool. I'm glad you guys had fun. Look forward to next week's. Let's get into a segment that we like to call Self-Care Tip of the Week. It is the segment where we give you some tips on how to care for yourself. This week, I was doing some self-care in the form of creating art and centering myself in it, and I would like to tell all of you about it. So I've been doing digital collage and painting and have been centering myself in my work and found it to be therapeutic, so I thought I'd share. So I'm going to list some benefits and some things to keep in mind when it comes to art as self-care in general, and then I'm going to list some things that I like about centering myself in my art. And then for the folks on YouTube only, we're so exclusive in here. You gotta fucking be a part of these clubs to get this access. But YouTube is free. So you just have to go to YouTube.
You just gotta go to YouTube.com. Yeah,
it's very simple. But for the people on YouTube, I will show some artwork. So let's get into 5 mental health benefits of art. This is from Art for the Streets, an organization that aims to provide a safe and encouraging environment in which the positive spirit and creativity for those experiencing homelessness are nurtured through their own artistic expression. So, number 1, art relieves stress. Drawing, sculpting, painting, etc. are all great ways to lower your overall stress levels and make you feel much better mentally. Essentially, it provides a distraction that will give your brain a much needed break from all of your usual ways of thinking, which are bad. If you're me. No, I'm just kidding. But sometimes.
Yeah, I'm about to say. Yeah. You're laughing, but I felt that.
Yuck. Cry. No. Perhaps one of the most popular artistic stress relievers, especially nowadays, is coloring books, many of which have been created specifically with stress relief in mind. Secondly, art helps to create creative thinking, or helps to encourage creative thinking, rather. As opposed to math, art doesn't require any kind of correct answer. I love how they singled out math. They were just like, fuck math, bro. We don't like it here. Instead, you can come up with your own type of solution and further stimulate your brain with this type of creative thinking. This is especially the case since you will be able to use both hemispheres of your brain. Thirdly, art helps to boost self-esteem and offer a sense of accomplishment. Similar to how hanging a child's artwork somewhere can boost their self-esteem, a sense of accomplishment doing the same thing with your own artwork can create the same type of effect. Even better is the fact that you don't have to create something that looks absolutely perfect in order to obtain these feelings. And it doesn't even matter what type of art you create, whether it's drawing, photography, or even knitting. Fourthly, art encourages brain activity. Whenever you engage in any kind of new activity, your brain begins working to create connections between all of the different brain cells. What's that called? Neuroplasticity?
Sure is.
Talk about that a lot on this show.
Hey.
A lot. In terms of creating art, this helps to stimulate all sorts of connections between various portions of your brain. And then for the folks up there in age, art improves the overall quality of life in dementia patients. Art has been shown to enhance factors such as memory and cognitive abilities, especially in those who suffer from serious mental disorders such as dementia. While it's been shown that different types of drug treatments generally don't work very well in these individuals, creating art provides a great sense of pleasure for them. This is because it has been shown to greatly improve self-esteem and social behavior. All right, so those are the general benefits of art. Now let's talk a little bit about why I like to play with my own image in my art. So as I've said on numerous episodes of Inner Hoa Uprising in the past, I really enjoy the way I look, and that comes up in my dating patterns because then I go on to date people who look like me, and I don't think that there's anything fucking wrong with that, you motherfuckers.
So I'm doing that
so
now
don't
more
judge
too.
Me. See, there
I
you go.
I find that I'm more attracted to people who look like me, and I continually say like,
because you're the
bad?
Greatest. You're the greatest, and you want to fucking date the greatest, son. And there's nothing wrong with that. Akua also does that, but nobody drags her for it. If we're in a space and there's a bald bitch with a fat ass and dark skin,
when it comes to women, like, femme presenting people, that's it. You're the one, sis. Yes. Come here.
You're the one for me. So there's that. Also, like, in general, it boosts your self-esteem, whether you're a narcissistic motherfucker or not. So lately, I've mentioned the fact that I felt unvalued and just a lack of reverence, like being revered for the bad bitch I am. So to counterbalance that and to remind myself that I am, in fact, that bad bitch that I've always known since 92, nigga.
Okay.
I put myself in the middle of the work to depict myself in a high regard as a physical iteration of the fact that I am, in fact, that bitch. It also allows me to express feelings that I can't quite put into words. So I'm going to put it into words right now, but in the moment I was feeling it, I was just like, you know when a feeling is just like bursting through your chest, yeah. But you don't know what to say? So that feeling that was kind of bursting through my chest, as I can explain it now, is that I needed to kill off a part of myself to make space for personal growth. And in one of these digital collages that I'm painting, it just sounds very like 14-year-old art, but it's what I needed to put down. I had a bedazzled gun, and it was pointing at me, and then on the other side of me, it was flowers coming out, and that is what I felt, and that is what depicted that
That's
thing
real.
In that time.
Love
Thank
it.
You.
Yeah.
Such a cute bedazzled gun, though. Like, I think that's my apocalypse weapon. I need a fucking bedazzled
it's
gun.
It's gotta be sparkly.
And then last but not least, it allows for creativity to see yourself in a different light than you're used to. So yesterday, I painted a mermaid, specifically La Sirene, who is a Loa in the Haitian pantheon of spirits. And I have always kind of felt connected to La Sirene, and I have like two different pieces of artwork of her hanging in my room, but I'm not a Haitian voodoo practitioner, nor am I initiated as her spirit. I just want to like clear that up, but like I just dig that Loa. So I want to do a painting of her, and I did. It was like a copycat of a different painting that I saw, but recently I dyed my hair blue, which you can see if you're on YouTube with the exclusive access. And instead of doing like a traditional black hair for her, I painted her hair blue because I was like, oh, I want to see myself reflected in this spirit who I really dig, because she's like forceful and calm, and I see those things in myself, and I want to see myself in her. So those are three things that I gain from putting my own image in my own art. I have other hypotheses as to why this could be conducive to someone's mental health, but I'm not a mental health professional, so I didn't want to say something and be wrong. But Akua or Rodeka, if you have, sorry to keep putting you on the spot,
like,
but if you have
like
any other things to say, I didn't want to like eliminate things that are important to say, but I also didn't want to say wrong things.
I mean, for me, even just hearing it, or like when you were saying it, I immediately in my head, it kind of clicked like that makes sense. But the reason why for me is like, cause I have a painting up here that I consider myself, and it's like a person in a lake but they're drowning, but it's like the tears. And I love it because it just ended up being me, but it wasn't something that I was thinking of. But it's also the feeling for me when you want to visualize something positive or get it out, seeing it as opposed to having it scrambled in your head, kind of like what you said, like seeing it sometimes makes it more clear what you were thinking, and it helps process it. So to me, it feels like therapy. That's definitely why people like draw when they feel awkward, or draw when they just feel like they need to like retain information. It's just like a different way of processing thing. Because I doodle in class, but I feel like everyone thinks that you're doodling and it's not like, I doodle myself like listening or doodling the things that the teachers are saying, because it just helps me absorb the information as opposed to just writing it out. And I just think art in general, especially putting yourself in it, makes it personable and makes it into something that you can process your feelings more. So when you said that, I was like, that's 100% what I assumed too.
Nice. Thank you for validating my fucking opinions, man.
And I would say that, you know, there's a process of creating art that when you're done fosters a sense of accomplishment. And we talk about the sense of accomplishment and then the magical feel-good things in your brain or chemicals in your brain. So yeah, that adds on to it as well, kind of starting something, not knowing what it's going to look like or knowing what it's going to look like, doing it and then saying, I fucking did that shit.
Exactly.
Thank you, guys. Some ideas, if you are thinking about creating art in your own image, some ideas of art that you can do collage, digital or analog. You can do photography of yourself. Just set that bad boy up. It doesn't have to be on a tripod. Stack some books, man. Painting, as we've said, sculpture, songs or poems about yourself, makeup, your face is art, or even body art, fashions, dressing yourself in something that is artistic, hair, film, reflexive documentary, which is a documentary solely about your experience with something, or an experimental audio piece, because this is a podcast and we're not going to forget the fact that audio is motherfucking art, niggas.
Nice.
Some things to remind yourself of is that you don't have to sell this. Anytime I talk about a hobby, I'm going to keep saying this. You do not fucking have to sell this. Get that idea out of your mind. This does not have to go anywhere. You don't have to be amazing or the next artiste of your generation, and that's okay. Only do this if it brings you happiness or some other emotion that you're seeking. Don't do it because Sam of Inner Hole Uprising podcast suggested that you do it. If thou doth make art, please share it with us. Tag us at Inner Hole Uprising on Twitter, at Inner Hole Uprising on Instagram. Hashtag us at Inner Hole Uprising on any platform. And email us at ihupodcast@gmail.com. And drop in our Patreon community Slack chat if you're a part of that. Y'all motherfuckers want to see some art now?
Yes.
Oh my God, they're so excited. I'm scared. All right, let's start with what I think is the best one, because you start strong and then you go downhill from there. Okay, how do I fucking share screen? All right, there we go. This is my digital collage. Cheese. There's me.
Hey! Okay. Wait a minute. Okay.
That's
now you
me.
Can feel the energy through this screen. Then. Like, I know what this
you
is.
You niggas
this
in podcast land are missing out, because
you're missing all of it.
There's a fucking sponge mountain in there.
Shit. Nah, this is dope. This is
Thank you.
What?
Yeah, I just played around with a lot of fucking different textures. And then in the background, it says strong. But that's a picture I took in New Orleans of Louis Armstrong Park. But I was just like,
so
I'm using strong, bro. Yeah, because I'm strong. And then a little fucking meme nod in the bottom left corner. That piece of land is actually cake.
It's actually cake.
The cake meme. So yeah, that's
I actually thought that sponge piece was cake.
Oh, that does kind of look like cake.
I thought it was strawberry cake. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
But it's
that also does look like cake. We're just some hungry ass niggas. Let me cut this off so I can get the fuck out of here. All right. Now I'm going to go to my other one, where I blast myself away with a bedazzled gun. And this one was like my first one. And I was like, man, I don't have to explain my art to you guys. Fuck it. I'm just going to
show it to us.
This one was my first one. And
don't judge me too hard. I promise I got better.
All right. This is my next one.
That one's good. Oh, that gun is fire. I get it.
I like it.
There has to be a zombie movie where the person is like going through the apocalypse with a fucking bedazzled gun.
I'm ready to make it, son. I'm ready to fucking make
when
it.
I don't know. I think it's just me. When you said bedazzled, I imagine it being pink, but I think that's just my own imagination. I did too.
Well, there's a lot of pink going on here. Yeah. I mean, fucking on a pink ass planet with Jupiter in the background, which I was like so excited to do that.
I love it.
I set the bed on fire. I was just like, things need to die. And shit needs to rise from the fucking ashes, nigga.
I love it.
Shit needs to rise from the ashes. Thank you, guys. And then the final piece I will show is my Little Mermaid painting, which is not done, but it's happening.
Hey!
What?
All right.
This is my bitch, La Siden. La Samran.
Okay, energy.
I like this.
Thank you, guys. Oh, I love it. It's like show and tell, but I'm not as shy anymore. Like when I was 5 and I was like, here's my doll.
Just up there shaking.
Here's like, my fucking doll. Can I go home? Please.
I don't want to tell. I don't want to show. I just want to go, please.
I just want to go. I would just like to go. So that's a self-care tip of the week. I really do hope that you motherfuckers get on YouTube to see the things that I have shared. And I hope that you motherfuckers share your shit with me because I really want to look. And yeah, I hope that helps.
That was amazing.
My artistic spirit, man. That's a good time.
Oh my God, I'm so happy. I've never been happier. I shine bright, I shine bright. And all my different colors, all my different colors, colors. We shine bright, we shine bright. And all our different colors, all our different colors. Brooklyn spiller, bad girl killer. Known as the baddest, ass ain't the fattest. More than my assets. And I still cause a lot of havoc. But I be on peace and positive energy. Still living in a world where folks trying to kill me. Here I see black women and queer. Created all these rules that I couldn't adhere to. Resilient, but don't ever fuck with my rights. The more I rise, the more they're trying to bring me down, 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 da, 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 down, down, down. All right, let's get into a segment that we like to call Fuck That Part 1, because we're going to do a Fuck That Part 2. But that is our current event segment, and today we're talking about how you get paid fucking on mattresses, specifically.
Yes, so, on mattresses, specifically. So, a company called Sleep Standards wants to pay couples $3,000 to have sex on different mattresses. Who is Sleep Standards? So Sleep Standards is a blog centered around all things sleep, including research-based sleep health advice, tips, and unbiased sleep product reviews. Let's get specific about what a sleep product is. That includes mattresses, pillows, blankets, snuggies, all of it. If you sleep with it, they reviewing it for your ass. It's run by all white cisgendered health professionals who are trained in psychiatry, neurology, psychology, and neuroscience. And they utilize a panel of experts, mostly white and cisgendered, who are also trained in medicine, behavioral studies, and neuroscience. So they are conducting an eight-week experiment to find the best mattress for sex and are enlisting the help of 5 regular couples to engage in the experiment. The participants, the couples, will be testing out 8 different current top rated mattresses for sex, which they will have delivered to your home once a week. The couples are required to review each mattress honestly on how it fares during sex and offer a rating from 1 to 10 on criteria including bounciness, noise, firmness, edge support, comfort, cooling, and then an overall score.
Cooling. I've never even considered that.
Wow.
Niggas cool down after sex? They don't just like fucking chug water?
No, I think it's cooling for the mattress.
No, cooling for the
mattress. She's like, wait a minute. We're cooling down after sex?
Is this an aerobics workout?
We stay hot.
No, so cooling for the mattress. Kind of like when you have like the cool side of the pillow or the cool side of the mattress, like how heat absorbent is it?
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So again, the prize is $3,000 and a free mattress of your choosing. And there's a lot of talk about anonymity, that the couples can choose to remain anonymous if they are selected. So now you must be thinking, how the fuck do I get in this? Where do I put my name? What do I do?
Hell yeah.
So you have to be 18 years or older, or quote unquote, otherwise have reached the age of majority under the laws of the state where you reside in order to participate.
I don't love that.
I don't know what the fuck that means, either. But
let's just keep it at 18.
Exactly. Why are we flexing the rules here?
Like. Exactly. You must be a couple. You have to send.
What if you're in a triad? Damn. What if you're in a triad?
I'll get to that.
It's not inclusive at all.
Fuck.
You have to send headshots, or preferably a 1 minute long video detailing your passion for the position.
That was a good one.
And then you have to complete the application, which includes questions about citizenship. The number of followers and friends. Exactly. The number of followers or friends you have on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, your state of origin, and the couple's origin story. Terms and conditions, because I actually had to read that, and that was like, this might be the first time I ever read somebody's terms and conditions, but I had to just make sure, because it already sounded a little wonky to me. So the terms and conditions further stipulate that only U.S. residents are eligible to participate, so all of our overseas folks, I'm sorry, this ain't for you. The closing date for entry is September 15th, so I'm letting y'all know we got time. September 15th at 11:59 MST. And then who? The winners...
He uses Mountain Standard Time.
Who?
Is that Arizona? Sorry, this is like the fourth time we're disrespecting Arizona. Okay, let me shut up.
Straight up.
Arizona.
Like Arizona's our punching bag on this Arizona show. It's so terrible.
I think Sam moved on from Arkansas because the people in Arizona hate her. She was like, that.
I just hate. Excuse me. I just don't like A states.
That
Alabama, you're next, niggas.
So the winners will be notified by email and or letter within 14 business days of the closing date, and must claim their prize within 10 days of notification to be a part of the study. It also says, quote unquote, winners will be required to complete certain tasks determined by the sleep standards team. If winners do not follow through with the task required of them, they will not receive the cash prize of $3,000 plus a free mattress of their choice.
That's a little bit Black Mary,
that's
isn't
a
it?
I was weird.
Like, what y'all about to ask us to do?
You don't pussy pop on a headstand on this motherfucking mattress,
Not getting the money.
Like, oh shit, let me stretch.
And what are the headshots for? I wanted to go back to that. Like, I know you could be anonymous, but like, is it possible that they'll just like put your headshots and your origin story on there about mattresses? Like, just like, this is the couple that tested this mattress out, so you kind of understand.
It is approved by April and Abraham.
You know them? If they fuck on it and they had a good time, I promise. Like,
you see these fashionable ass niggas? Don't you want to fuck on the same mattress?
That's what I'm assuming it is.
Interesting.
So that made me that made me a bit worried. I don't think worry is the word I'm looking for, but that's the word I'm using.
Gave you pause.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I also had some other questions, as like, are all couplings welcome? There's no clear definition of a couple, and I find issue with that, because as an experiment, they should be operationally defining what a couple is. And what I mean by operationally defining, operational definitions allow for researchers to describe in a specific way what they mean when they use a certain term. Generally, operational definitions are concrete and measurable. So if they have to define it in a way that I can then also find that same term or find that same thing again or replicate it. So I don't like the fact that they call this an experiment, but she ain't gonna tell me what a couple is.
Cool is getting her scientific bag.
I love it. Don't be calling this an experiment.
Can a couple be me and my sex doll, nigga? Can it be me and my vibrator? That's two entities.
Because I need.
Can it be my right hand and my left hand?
Can it be the triad? You know, yeah. Can it be me and my homosexual partner? Like, who are you talking about here? Right. Do I have to be married? Do we have to really be in a defined relationship? Can it not just
be my fuck buddy?
Friends with benefits?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Can it be my best friend who I fuck on occasion?
You don't know what I be doing.
Can it be my first date and I just want to fuck on the mattress? No. I'm sorry.
Does that not count? Like,
we're a couple now.
I have a question about... Like, are they fucking taking the mattress in and out themselves? Because, like, what if I have a fourth floor walk-up, nigga? You moving this shit? Because it's not going to be me.
So they... Also, what happens to the mattress after?
That's a great question, Rodeca. That's a great question. Are we repurposing this shit? Or are we fucking wasting mattresses when it's like a whole climate change ass world where we shouldn't be wasting shit?
They wasting the mattresses, y'all. And I know they are.
Or I think they're repurposing it.
I mean,
eight mattresses and is it one couple?
Niggas fuck on mattresses in hotels.
So
it
is true. It is 40 mattresses altogether.
It's a lot of mattresses.
They better donate those.
Y'all better steam clean them, sterilize them, and then donate them or some.
I would buy a mattress that I would take for free a mattress that a couple has previously fucked on. If it's clean.
Maybe that's why they need the picture, because they're like, all right, you get to choose which couple.
That's very Black Mirror-esque. That's very Black Mirror-esque.
They're like, okay, I would definitely take the mattress that Sarah and Susan's fucked on. I want that. I just want it for myself.
That's kind of perverse.
Yeah.
Like, I like Sarah and Susan. Don't clean the mattress, actually.
I want to smell them on it.
That's it.
Ooh, no.
I want to roll around on this. I believe I'm you. I'm so the mattress lonely. Is firm. Just give it to me.
What else gave me pause was the question about citizenship. I was just like...
These niggas is the feds.
Yeah, come on.
What does that matter?
Come on now.
If I'm undocumented, does my rating not matter? Does my review now no longer stand?
I'm here.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I don't need to be documented.
I'm
to
here
be
and I'm having sex, bro.
Like,
so what? Yeah, man.
And I use mattresses, so what's the difference, bro?
Didn't like that. And also, again, what are these certain tasks? Like, are y'all telling us what position to do it on? The whole thing, and I'm gonna get into it, but the whole thing.
And how do you know if I did or not? Got a GoPro in here?
That's a fact. They're recording.
There was also
They're the feds.
There was also a lot of emphasis placed on anonymity. Which led me to question, like, where are these reviews going? Where am I, like, writing and leaving my review? That you keep reiterating that I can be anonymous if I want to. The people in my life don't know I'm fucking. Like, and if they don't, hell, I don't know what they think we doing.
Yeah, you don't need to be that anonymous, right? Like, yeah. I enjoyed having sex on this mattress, and your grandma just dies. You be having sex? That's her dying. Sex? She doesn't finish sex because she's passed away.
Because grandma's dead. Like, what? Nah. If that is my...
This is why I wanted to be anonymous.
If that is my background...
Y'all niggas done killed my grandma. I'm suing.
Go ahead, Aku. I'm sorry.
Oh, my goodness. I feel like if that's my background, I'm not signing up for this anyway. Like,
right, exactly.
That happening. Yeah. I feel like the other missing criteria... So I read the criteria, which again included bounciness, firmness, comfort, cooling... Edge support, which I don't know what that means, but
at first I thought I was like edging, and I was like, wait, no, that doesn't make sense.
And then an overall score, and I then thought, you know, what would I need in a mattress for regarding sex? And I thought I would want to rate or know about the material and the absorbency, like how will this mattress fare against the dreaded wet spot? Because that is a problem in my sex life. Okay.
Same.
WAP on WAP on WAP, nigga.
Quick tangent.
It's a problem in mine, too.
quick tangent, though. I used to have a partner who would, like, purposely initiate sex by rolling over to my side of the bed and then roll back to his when we was done. I was like, no, nigga,
niggas
this
is
ain't
so
it
lousy,
no more.
Bro. Niggas is really lousy, motherfuckers.
Damn. Do not think you about to leave me in this wet spot. Oh, do you think I laid in him? Bitch, please.
Like, no. That's when I lay on top of a nigga.
There we go.
Well, now I'm comfortable.
Yeah. It's my favorite. It's my favorite cuddle position.
But anyway. And then also, one thing I thought of was like, how do mattresses fare against like management and distribution of like weight, of body weight? What if we are two bigger bodied people? is this mattress about to hold up while we fucking? Because shit get real. Okay, so.
Yeah.
That's real.
They're just giving you the mattress or they're giving you a full bed frame?
No, they're just giving you.
Because what if mattress. You have a shitty ass bed frame?
Bed frame.
And you fuck once and the shit falls through.
Yeah, they're taking a lot of things into consideration.
Yeah, like with the sound shit. That's important.
Yeah, bed. Let's not even talk about the sound shit because it's so important. It's not just the sound of
Rebecca
mattress,
is waking everybody up too, in fucking Flatbush Brooklyn right now.
Honestly.
It's like that things fucking Roddy Rich sound.
Yes. No, it's the box. It makes me sound like the fucking
it's
box
fucking some cut. What it is, ho? What's the
chopped and screwed version? That's it. It's not a good time, y'all. That's important. That's why when I saw it on there, I was like, okay. So they do take that in consideration. Mm-hmm. Having roommates or having family, like, it's so loud and you're so aware of it. Anyway, yes, that is important. The frame matters.
Oh, hashtag all frames matter. Bed frames matter.
Anyway. And then my last thought was, this is sex work.
This is definitely sex work. I was thinking about that. Like, yeah, no, it's definitely sex work.
This is scientific sex work. Don't play with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now give me my 300, my 3,000, and my mattress.
Like, call a spade a fucking spade.
That's it.
How about like normalize letting sex workers use this? Like, isn't a trick a fucking if you with him for the night? That's a couple, right?
That's
there.
A couple. That's a
or
date.
If he buys eight sessions with all eight mattresses, like fuck it, we out here, bro.
We getting it done.
Then you're making your money make money, like the niggas from LLC Twitter. you want to flip a $3,000?
If you don't have a business by the end of this, you're a failure.
You gotta open your own mattress shop after this.
Yes.
Nigga, what? You didn't learn anything from those niggas?
Mattress testing.
Yeah. You better go to dinner with Jay-Z after that shit.
But yeah, if you want to throw your hat in the ring and possibly win $3,000 and a new bomb-ass mattress that you done already fucked on so you know it work, Sam's gonna put the link in the description below.
That I will. Cool. Thank you for that, Akua.
That's dope.
If anybody wins, let us know, bro.
Let it to her.
And then, like,
yeah,
donate some of those old mattresses. I have a good mattress, but like, I'll sell yours. I'll flip that shit. I'll flip your fucking mattress.
That's it. Or I won't if I see that headshot and I'm digging it. Just telling the truth.
Let's put it in the studio.
Like, straight up.
I'm feeling horny after episodes. Just roll around in your fucking wet spots. Anyway. Is the conversation in this episode so far resonating with you? Helping you learn some new shit or helping you unlearn some old shit or just allowing you to have a good ass time? Oh, you said it is. Well, we love to hear that. We would also love for you to support the continuation of conversations like these. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, you can take a moment to subscribe to us or drop us 5 stars and a rating for the homies. If you got a little extra change, you can drop some cash in the PayPal by going to paypal.me/innerho. Or you can come join our Patreon community and access our chat and virtual events for as low as $2 a month by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising. Or you can just hit up a friend and say, yo, listen to this good ass podcast. We thank and love you all for your continued support. Akua, are you ready to use your best phone sex operator voice? If not, I'll use my worst.
I guess. Hold on. Let's wet the whistle.
Ooh, wet? Wet ass whistle? A wow? Yeah.
A wow.
A wow.
Dang.
Hold on. I got clear throat.
That's all phone sex operators before they get on.
Hello.
Yep.
Hey.
Do you have a lot on your mind? In times of stress or anxiety, it can be hard to remember to take time to focus on yourself. But your joy and pleasures are so important, especially right now. Put your well-being first with Dipsy. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories and guided sessions that are decided to turn you on and help you get in touch with yourself. The stories are relatable and immersive, so you feel like you're right there. And there's something for everyone, whoever and whatever you're into. They add new content every week, so there's always more to explore. Find stories about a spontaneous hookup with a hot stranger, getting closer with that sexy yoga instructor you can't stop thinking about, or even stories about trying that new toy together or getting tied up. The wellness section.
Sorry. I didn't know you were looking at me. Sorry.
Good job. The wellness sessions can help you unlock new confidence or heighten intimacy with your partner. They add new stories every week so you never get bored. Spice things up today with Dipsy. And for listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/IHU. There's a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/IHU. dipsystories.com/IHU.
More like dipsystories.com. Now we're going to return to current events in our next segment, but for now we're heading into some history within a segment that we like to call Sam Presents Ass Media.
Ass Media.
Da 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 da. Yeah, make a jingle for that. I gotta hit up Diamond Man.
Yes.
Ass Media is a segment and a play on the term mass media. It is when I, or anybody else who chooses to, gives a book, TV, podcast, well, anybody on the show that chooses to, not just like
not
fucking
anybody's writing in
Brenda on the block. give a book, TV, podcast, film review that relates to sex, love, dating, gender, and race. And usually they're spoiler-free reviews. I have a spoiler section of this review, but I'm going to go through the spoiler-free stuff first. First, I want to give a content warning about the film that I'm about to review. The story does include a story of sexual assault. To skip this film review, please check the time code in the show notes. And you can hop right into our current event story about gene-edited babies if you want to skip this. So this week's film is called You Belong to Me, Sex, Race, and Murder in the South. It is a 2014 American documentary film produced by Hilary Saltzman, Kitty Potapow, Jude Hagen, and directed by John Cork. And if you didn't guess from all of the names, all of these people are white. Those were actually some of the whitest names I've ever heard in my entire life. Specifically, Kitty Potapow.
It's the kitty. Yep, it's the kitty.
And Hilary Saltzman. Like,
no, the John Cork did it for me.
They're actually just all the whitest things.
Yeah, it's everything.
Are the whitest kids, you know. Anybody remember that show?
I love that show. I remember that show.
It's very silly. Okay, this is not that show. The synopsis of this is that in 1952, a prominent black woman killed a white doctor in Florida after suffering years of sexual abuse at his hands. Despite abundant evidence that she was acting in self-defense, a jury found her guilty and sentenced her to death. So my quick review of this documentary is, if you're interested in rooting your understanding of race, gender, sexuality, abuse, class, and power as it pertains to the 1950s Southern United States in a real-life story that encapsulates all of those elements, and film is your preferred media of taking in new information, then I would recommend that you watch this. I think it was a solid starting point that tells a lot about American history through the angle of this story specifically. So if this story sounds interesting to you, like, by all means, it's a solid story and uses some, not the story itself, but like the telling of the story in the documentary is a solid story and uses some good narrative elements. But I think it wavers at the end, which I'll get into. And as a black viewer, it opens up questions regarding who tells which stories and why. So just touch on some elements. So cinematography, it opens with establishing shots that depict like a very gothic looking South that I enjoyed. It like set the stage for the film. But some shots you can tell when the budget was lacking. Like, I'm like, did you clean the lens? And I should never ask that. Oh my God. But you know, documentary is hard, man. Give documentarians money because we never get any, to be honest. Editing, there were a lot of matching shots. This story takes place specifically in Live Oak, Florida. So there's a lot of matching shots of today and yesteryear when the story takes place. And the theme of it all existed then, still sits with us today. So I thought that those intercutting were really nice. So that was like a good editing style to do that. Some of the themes that like sit with us that sat with us then that still sit up with us today are like the outcome of the case and poor race relations in Live Oak, for example, which is something that they talk about. So they talk about it and they depict it visually. So that's nice. They also use crossfades, which I just don't like those anymore. I feel like that's fallen out of style in terms of film. So, but this was filmed in 2014, or maybe it was filmed like 2 years before. So sure, I'll give them that. Storytelling elements, it has black and white film noir Errol Morris-esque reenactments. I don't know if anybody's ever seen A Thin Blue Line. Okay, well, you've never had to see that to see, like, in documentaries when it's, like, black and white and you see the reenactment image of the person holding the gun and...
Yes. Yes. Yeah,
it's that style. That's what style okay. is. Thin Blue Line was, like, the first documentary to ever employ that, so that's why people call it like the Errol Morris style. Which sure, I mean, it didn't pull me out of it, it didn't pull me into it, sure. One thing that I do like in terms of story elements, they have like these surreal ghostly shots of Ruby McCollum is the main character, or she's the person who the story is about, the woman who killed her white doctor. And it has her walking in 1950s garb, but like in modern day Live Oak, Florida. And I like that because it's like, okay, the impact of her story is still felt today. The ghost of her story still sits with Live Oak, Florida. And also, it just looks creepy as shit. And I'm just like, where is October, man? I want all the ghosts who are mad to inflict vengeance upon all you motherfuckers. I'm just angry. But I liked that. It looked cool. They have 39 interviews, so it's like everybody and their fucking mama was interviewed, which is A1, that's good. Her family, her friends, the doctor who was killed's family, the family of the lawyers of him, or I guess that would be the state, community members, historians, oral historians, local politicians, authors, professors, one juror who was actually there, and the family member of another juror. So everybody was in it. They also use a lot of different elements to tell the story. There's pictures, there's maps, there's home footage, there's historical footage, there's photos. If you are triggered by photos of lynchings, that is in this. So keep that in mind. There's title cards, there's trial testimony, audio reenactments. And usually with an audio reenactment, it can go pretty bad. But they had audio reenactments of black women in Florida at the time. And it just sounded like black women from Florida. I'm like, thank you. I'm so glad that it actually just sounds like this and not something else. There's newspaper clippings, audio reenactments, which is just the people reading from newspaper clips, archival interviews, crime scene evidence photos, and it even opens with an excerpt from Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston. Zora Neale Hurston actually plays a significant role in this story, and I'll get into that a little bit later. Then there's random ass narration at the top and the end of the film from one of the producers, Jude Hagen. So it starts off with like a photo montage and her talking about how she found this story and why she wanted to tell it. One, I just don't think it was necessary. Sakua shaking her head. I don't think that was necessary to the story. It didn't add anything for me personally. But then second of all, I was really confused because up until that point, anytime you heard someone and didn't see them talking to the screen, they were dead. So I thought like this random ass person who had died was speaking about why they wanted to tell this story. And I'm like, who the fuck is that? And then I realized that it was Jude Hagen.
Oh, he inserted himself. You know what? Never mind.
She's a woman. Don't misgender Jude up in here. Oh, the director is John. That's the guy.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, Jude came in there. She also comes in the end. I have thoughts about that. I'll get to it later. A little bit about the narrative. There's a fucking lot going on in this. Just like stories are complicated and complex, and especially stories relating to gender and race and class and things like that, there's a lot of context that you need to bring in. So they bring in that context. Appreciated that. Let's talk about the fact that she was born shortly after slavery, that post-slavery America was oppressive as fuck with the Black codes and Jim Crow, and they talk about the dynamics and imbalance of power toward white men and Black women, which is like the crux of this, so thank you for doing that. They talk about what actually happened, how it came to her shooting him, but then they also talk about not only the historical context of everything, but the context that's going on in all of their lives, and there was a lot of illegal shit going on and corruption and race relations and just... I compare the story to a pimple because there was a lot of pus underneath and her killing him was like all of it coming to a head, in my opinion. It also towards the end talks about, well, of course it talks about the trial, but it talks about other things surrounding the trial, not just the trial itself. So that's where they bring in Nora Zielhurst. That is the second time that happened on this show. Why is that so easy to say? They talk about Zora Neale Hurston and her importance in covering the story. So if you don't know, which we mentioned on the show in the past, in addition to being an author, prolific author, Zora Neale Hurston was an anthropologist and she reported on this story. So she reported on this story for a newspaper called like the Pittsburgh Post or the Pittsburgh Gazette. And that was important because that was the only paper outside of Florida covering this story, which then led this story to become a national story or a story that was recognized outside of Florida. Interestingly enough, because she was Black, she had to literally sit in the colored section of the courthouse, and she was like the only Black person covering this story, but she couldn't even speak to Ruby McCollum as a reporter. So then it talks about she was kind of like, and I didn't double check this is just like the way that the documentary depicted it to me, she was writing like she actually was speaking to Ruby McCollum. And then her editor found out that she wasn't. And she got taken off the story because they were like, nigga, you're being deceitful. So then she called up her friend. What the hell was his name? His last name is Huey. I don't remember his name and I don't like him, to be honest. But he was a white reporter and he's covered like a lot. He had covered like a lot in regards to civil rights and things like that. And he covered this story. So then he picked up the story and his influence in the story led to what happened with her retrial, which I won't spoil, but yeah. And then, you know, it seems like me just telling you that, like, oh, a white man led to her getting a retrial, one might think like, oh shit, this is like a white savior kind of narrative. And he was just doing his due diligence and he wanted to like hold space and fucking bear witness and shit like that. But that nigga was a fucked up ass nigga. And they gave their little 5 minutes to tell why that nigga was a fucked up ass nigga. And I was like, good for that. Good for that, because I don't like the white savior narratives out here.
Never.
Yeah. So it talks about that, and then it talks about the aftermath of the trial in both Ruby McCollum's life and also in the town, which is a short section. Yeah, it's a short section. So I feel like that could have been delved into more, but I guess it depends on what story you're trying to tell. Some of the themes discussed: power dynamics, racially, gender-wise, and also doctor-patient power dynamics. So at one point somebody interviewed calls the doctor a god within the community, which I really think speaks volumes to how something like this could even happen in the first place, and kind of still speaks volumes to things that we experience today where we're like, this doctor said something fucked up to me, or this doctor is not doing their due diligence in telling me about whatever in regards to my sexual health, but I kind of like minimize myself because doctors are revered.
Yep.
It talks about consent a lot. So what consent means when these dynamics are at play. Can someone willingly consent to be a quote unquote mistress under these circumstances? Because it was disputed, or people had differing ideas whether or not it was just straight up like he forced her to do this, whether it was she obliged because of the gender and the doctor-patient dynamics there. There was whether she actually consented and agreed to be his mistress. And then there were people with the perspective that she was either addicted to drugs that he was giving, which is like rape in a different sort of way, or whether she was, I guess, mentally ill and he was taking advantage of that. So a lot of people chime in with their different perspectives. If something like that is triggering for you to hear, I would not recommend you listen to watch this documentary. So there's that discussion of consent. There's also a discussion of sanity. Was Ruby McCollum in her quote-unquote right mind when shooting the guy's name is Doc Adams? Can someone be in their right mind as a Black woman in the 1950s United States getting potentially abused by their doctor? There's mentions of her having mental health issues, but they never really get into what that meant or where it stemmed from or whether or not it was before or after the abuse. That was unclear to me. And I want to give them grace and say it was probably unclear because it was unclear to them, but I want them to even clarify their unclarity. Like, I wanted like a, we don't really know. Then a bit at the end, they talk about psych wards as carceral facilities and the fact that avoiding prison or the death penalty to instead live in a psych ward isn't like all gravy, baby, which I think a lot of people think after somebody like gets off on, what is it? An insanity plea? Is that what that would be called? Okay. There's themes of money and greed. There's a whole gambling storyline, which I didn't expect to happen. There's Doc Adams' extension to power. And then there's a lot about public and private lives. So the public Doc Adams was, we all love him. The private was, he was corrupt as fuck. And then also was having sexual relations with Black women, which some people, or at least a Black woman, whether consensual or non-consensual. And some people were like, well, we didn't even expect that from him. So he was also married. Public and private lives. Then there was the public and private life of the quote unquote wealthiest Black family in town, which was Ruby McCollum's family. And the public is like, ah, yes, these people just like went to New York, made their money. The private is Ruby McCollum's husband was running this whole gambling scheme and paying off the cops. And fucking all of Florida.
What kind of, what?
So there was just a lot, you know, there was honestly a lot going on. This could be a miniseries, to be honest. Okay, so that's like all of the things that I think I can discuss without spoilers. Now there's some spoilery things that I do want to talk about. If you don't want spoilers, check the show notes for a time code where you could skip forward to. So Doc Adams became, this is me spoiling and then I have things to say after it. Doc Adams came up shady as a doctor. It was like he wasn't like fully going through his training and shit like that, blah, blah, blah. Then after that, he did a lot of corrupt shit in town, like saying niggas was his patients when they wasn't his patients and like giving people freebies. But the people who were actually getting freebies were people who like lived on his farm and things like that. And it's just like he came to power in a very corrupt way. And eventually, like, his ascension to power led to him being elected to the Florida State Senate. And then everybody thought that he was probably on track to becoming the governor of Florida had he not been killed. So that just made me think about how many shady-ass motherfuckers who abuse women along the way during their rise to power hold office right now at this very moment. So if you can be corrupt and discarding of human beings in your rise to political or economic or whatever the fuck kind of power you're trying to get, it's not all that unlikely for you to also be abusive in other facets of your life. And I think sexual abuse is one of those facets. So I think it's just like a microcosm of mad stuff. Like one of the throwaway stories that we had this week that we were thinking about was this 19-year-old who, what did he do? Porn revenge?
Yeah.
When he was 12, and now he, like, won the Democratic primary in whatever state, and he's running for mayor.
He blackmailed, yeah.
Yeah.
It was blackmail.
Yeah. A nude blackmail, yeah.
Yeah.
Next point, Ruby McCollum ended up having a child by Doc Adams. There's a lot of shit in this fucking documentary. There's a lot of shit in this documentary. Her name was Loretta. She looked like a half-white, half-black baby, and she also looked like Doc Adams. Ruby McCollum's sister-in-law held up the baby in court when Ruby McCollum's lawyer was trying to prove that there was a sexual relationship between Ruby McCollum and Doc Adams, and the judge instructed the jury to look away.
Whoa!
And half the jurors looked, and half of them didn't. And the one juror who's still alive who got interviewed was like, I didn't look because the judge told me not to look. So
this is a scandal.
It really was. No, it really was. There was a lot of shit going on. So that part, I was like already in the mindset like, oh, this is going to be like kind of a fucked up story. So I was already like prepared for all that. But that part actually like made me tear up Because it was just like this little innocent ass baby being a product of shame and abuse and silence and racial and sexual violence. It just hurt my soul. And like, they just showed like a little picture of her and she was just like such a small baby. She had these big ass cheeks. I was like, no, I don't want that for her. I don't want that for her. And then like, that's for her, but that's also like so indicative of so many African-American and Afro-Caribbean and Afro-European stories that we have these fucking lineages of rape and shame and sexual violence and these fucked up power dynamics. And so like that's she's an allegory for all of us. And the judge saying look away is an allegory for all of America, ignoring the fact that white men have been fucking abusing black women since this country's inception, son. Since this country's inception. There was one line that somebody said in the documentary that was like, white men are daytime segregationists and nighttime integrationists.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That's that real shit.
Nah, that's good.
That's real good shit.
Not good in general, but that's a good line.
Yeah.
Fuck.
We gotta talk about this nigga Sam McCollum, and I'm not happy that he has my namesake. Sam was running a gambling scheme called Bolita. I didn't know what the fuck Bolita was, but it's some like betting on numbers that are shaped in balls type shit. It's how many people in Florida families got their wealth. Doc Adams was in a Bolita scheme with Sam McCollum. They went to dinners together, and Sam even paid $5,000 for Doc Adams' Florida State Senate run when they were entwined with each other. Also, many people said that it was no secret that there was something going on with Doc Adams and Ruby McCollum and that he was making house calls every day. Ain't no doctor coming to your house every day, bro. So my question is, did Sam McCollum, Ruby's husband, know what was going on? It would be hard for me to believe that he wasn't. And then my question is, did you throw your fucking wife to the white wolf to get your bag? I would not be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And the quote from Their Eyes Were Watching God that the movie starts off with is like, a white man tosses his handkerchief on the floor. The black man picks it up because he has to pick it up. And then he doesn't hold it. He makes the black woman hold it. And then it was like, black women are the mule of the earth or whatever. So it's like, to fucking progress yourself forward, did you like undercut your wife and like sacrifice your wife's sanity and like consent and shit like that? Then after finding out his wife killed Doc Adams, it's highly believed that Sam McCollum killed himself. And then I'm just like, did you leave your family and your wife during this time when you were intertwined in all of this shit?
So it's believed.
So the story is that he had a heart attack, but an alternate narrative is that he had all of these heart pills from Doc Adams and he took all of the heart pills when he left Live Oak, Florida.
What a fucking story, man.
There's a lot
like,
going on.
What?
To this point, not specifically Sam, but like related, Ruby McCollum's sister was still alive at the taping of this documentary. I don't know if she's still alive now. But in an interview referencing the murder, she says about Ruby, she messed up a good thing, basically let her family down because like she fucked up their money. And it was just like, damn, niggas, do we have to like lay down and be abused for the progression of the quote unquote black family? I don't know if that was taken out of context, but it was a pretty damning statement from Ruby McCollum's sister. She just seemed like annoyed with her. She seemed annoyed with her sister for killing this rapey old white man. Then there's the end. Let's talk about the end a little bit before we get into gene edited babies. In the beginning of the film, it stated that Sam McCollum Jr. didn't want to talk about, that's their son, Sam and Ruby's son, didn't want to talk about his family. In the end, the filmmakers get a chance to talk to him. I don't know how it happened. I hope it's not just them like, boom, 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 like, constantly open the fuck up, nigga. Them. But they talk to him. The director, John Cork, asks him questions, blah, blah, blah. Then Jude, the woman who I thought was dead at first, asks, she comes back in with her narration. And in real time in the narration, she says, in real time in the actual film, she says to Sam Jr., I don't believe it was a consensual relationship. I believe that your mother was something along the lines of raped, coerced, or abused. I don't remember exactly what word she used, but she said that to this man who did not want to talk to them in the first place. Maybe he did now, but he didn't want to talk to y'all in the first place. That's the first thing she started off hot. That's the first thing she said to him. Then in narration, Jude says, it's just like very white woman. I immediately regretted my words, placing my own narrative onto her son. And my thought is just like, yes, you're injecting your beliefs, but you're also saying something that could potentially re-traumatize the person who has in the past told you that they don't even feel comfortable discussing this. Then secondly, yes, that happened. I don't think that should have happened. But secondly, why the fuck was that in the film? Why did we need that? I get it as a teaching moment and like as a documentarian, but like put that in your book about being a documentarian or like say it in your class when you're teaching documentaries. Like, this is not the way to go about things because you might re-traumatize the people who you're trying to bear witness for. Like, what the fuck was that? Then she wraps up like with a quote, like, when Ruby was silenced, her story was taken over by others. She became what others see of her. We can never truly speak for Ruby, but we can speak about her. And then only can old wounds heal and we find closure. So, like, I think that's a valid thing to say, but we didn't need to see or hear you doing the thing that you're condemning for that point to be made, in my opinion. It just didn't need to happen. Just didn't need to fucking happen. Then it leads to me to some interesting backstory, which is my final point. So on the film's website, it tells about how the story got made. In 2001, Jude had a conversation with the University of Florida English professor Dr. James Haskins. James Haskins is a prolific writer. He wrote a book called The Cotton Club, which the 1984 film The Cotton Club was based off of. If you never saw that, it like took place in the 1920s. Very jump and jive about race relations in the 1920s. He was black. He passed away. They spoke about the story of Ruby McCollum, and Jude was like, ah, yes, yes, tell me more. And Dr. Haskins said to her, go to Florida and find out more and make a film about it. And Jude was like, I'm white. I shouldn't do that. And Dr. Haskins was like, that was precisely why you are the right person to do it. So it's a bit of hotepery from Dr. Haskins. May he rest in peace. But what the fuck was that nigga talking about?
I don't like that.
What the fuck was Dr. Haskins talking about, bro? I don't really know. I'm not opposed to white people telling black stories, but when the white story is about a black woman and specifically rooted in race and gender, especially of a traumatic nature, you need to have a black woman tell that story. And also you should have several black women in the room telling that story so that like someone isn't wavering in one direction because of white pressure and just like feeling weird and awkward in a creative space. I feel like you might be precisely the right person for the job when you make it clear and explicit that you are telling this story from the lens of your white perspective and demonstrate a clear reason why that perspective is valuable. Otherwise, I do not think that you are precisely the right person for the job, especially when I'm going into this movie as a viewer to just learn about this. And in the end, I just see you asking traumatizing ass questions and me like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. When I'm trying to learn about Ruby McCollum and you're telling me like, oh, my bad. It's just like,
I'm just trying to figure out what would possess him to say that she's the right person. Like, so people would
have been a coon. I cannot speak for this man.
May?
I don't want
to. Coon chip.
I don't know.
Has been activated.
Coon chip.
Okay.
Not the coon chip. Dr. Omar is rolling over in the park that he sleeps in. Sorry.
Oh, man.
But yeah, so You Belong to Me, Sex, Race, and Murder in the South is available to watch with a subscription on Amazon Prime.
I've got to watch this.
Yeah, I mean, you'll learn something.
Even with the spoilers, I'm watching something. Yeah.
You'll learn something.
You'll learn something.
All right, well, you know what else you can learn? You can learn how to listen. You can do that. When you're working from home or you're working on your fitness. And when you're listening, I bet that you want what you're listening to be what you're listening to, not what your roommates, your neighbors, your significant other, your children, your dog, whoever the fuck is listening to. Everyone needs a great pair of wireless earbuds, but before you drop hundreds of dollars on a pair, check out wireless earbuds from Raycon. You already know Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and they sound just as amazing as other top audio brands you know. Their newest model, the Everyday P25 earbuds are the best ones yet, with 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, man, and more compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. Raycon's wireless earbuds are so comfortable, perfect for conference calls or binging podcasts. What do you guys do with your Raycons?
I like it because with other headphones, I notice that like there's a leakage and I can still hear other things. But with this one, like when I'm trying to listen to music, I used to take walks a lot. So that was, I definitely grabbed those and went with them. I can't hear anything and the music sounds so crisp.
Mm. How about you, Akua?
No, definitely. I use my earbuds when I'm walking during my morning self-care. And yeah, like once I pop them in, even before I like turn anything on, I'm just hearing my footsteps like around the house. Like that should just be like, you hear the insides of your body once like noise canceling means noise canceling. But I also just recently binged all of the Bag Ladies podcast from March until August, and that was on my ear. That was the 6 hours. They were not lying. Like it came through.
Nice, 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 nice. Raycons always come through. Unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet with no dangling wires or stems to distract anyone during video calls. The company was co-founded by my favorite hat-moving love and hip-hop star, Ray J. And celebrities like Brandy, J.R. Smith, and Rich the Kid are obsessed with their Raycons. Now's the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycons. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/IHU. That's buyraycon.com/IHU for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. That's buyraycon.com/I as in inner, H as in ho, U as in uprising. Now that's a party on the weekend. She love the party on the weekend. She love the party on the weekend. What you doing? Why do these niggas want gene edited babies, man? What's going on here?
Why do they? So we'll get into it later. This title definitely draws you in, but they don't even explain it in the article. So what? I want us to draw our own theories. Yes, the article is, and it's titled, Men Are Twice as Likely to Support Genetically Engineering Babies Than Women. Right? Okay. Niggas just do nigga shit, you know? Anyway.
Niggerific.
So if you're unfamiliar with CRISPR technology, we love science here. We're always talking about science. So I've kind of dipped into this. So I knew about it. And when I saw it, I was like, I got to talk about it. So CRISPR technology is a simple yet powerful tool for editing genomes. It allows researchers to easily alter DNA sequences and modify gene function. It has many potential applications, including correcting genetic defects, treating and preventing the spread of diseases, and improving crops. It also raises a lot of ethical concerns. The birth of the world's first gene-edited babies were revealed in November 2018, and it was met with international shock and outrage. So it turns out that Chinese researcher He Jianqiu, it was secretly, basically, no one really knew about it, and just unveiled it and used CRISPR to modify the genomes of 2 human embryos in the hopes of making the resulting babies resistant to HIV. His experiment was almost universally condemned by the scientific community, leading some of the researchers to call for a temporary ban on creating more gene-edited babies. But on the flip side, the general public was a lot more supportive. So there's been a lot of surveys, but with this one, they surveyed 1,537 members of the public across 67 countries. People said they were generally in favor of the germline genetic editing. So germline editing specifically, germline is a biologist's jargon for the egg and the sperm, which combine to form an embryo. By editing the DNA of these cells or the embryo itself, it could be possible to correct disease genes and pass those genetic fixes on to future generations. That's the promise. That's what they want to say, you know, just that's what we want to do. But everyone who hears about germline editing, the fear is that it'll be a path towards a super people or designer babies. If you want a child with blue eyes and blonde hair, or if you want to make a certain group highly intelligent, then that's what you would be able to do. It wouldn't just go down to preventing these diseases. It would become kind of like a control type of thing. It is different from somatic gene editing, which also alters the DNA of the person that is being treated and is explored as a treatment for cancer and a handful of genetic conditions. But it only alters that one person and not the entire line afterwards. So participants in the survey watched an educational video that explained the basic science behind CRISPR gene editing and were then given an information sheet explaining the concept of germline gene editing. People were then asked to which degree they agreed with the hypothetical uses of germline gene editing, from medical applications to enhancement purposes. So a majority of the participants said that they strongly agree with the use of germline editing to prevent untreatable diseases or fatal diseases that begin in childhood or adulthood. However, they weren't on board to support it to prevent mental illness specifically. So if it was for mental illness, they didn't want to do it, and to impart resistance on infectious diseases. Around half of the respondents disagreed or strongly disagreed with the use of the editing to enhance traits like vision, sports performance, intelligence, or self-discipline, while a large portion of the people were undecided about these uses, which is good. So that means that the designer baby trope isn't really something that trope. The designer baby idea isn't something that either scientists or the general public are kind of going for. But then here's the title: men were twice as likely as women to support its use for enhancement. So like the sports enhancement or the
facial enhancements. These niggas want a fucking LeBron child out here, bro.
Uh-huh. I hate to see it. And more than 50% of the men who responded to the survey supported all uses across the board for it. Yeah. So it turns out that parents were less supportive of germline editing than the people without children, as well as religious participants were the most opposed to germline editing across the board. Those who reported to have expertise or work in genetics were also way more resistant to it. So for me reading it, I know you're nodding, and I know, like, for me reading it, and I was always fascinated with it. I was actually kind of initially surprised that geneticists, scientists, and like people who are working with genes in general are so opposed to it. I didn't think that the scientific community would be like, oh, don't do this, because I thought that they were just kind of like always about experimentation. And I don't know what it is. I just assumed that they didn't have like these, they're just like, whatever, in the name of science, we just got to keep going. And it would be the general public who are like, nah, let's not do that. So I was surprised, but it's because, I mean, there's so many things that can go wrong in a situation. So they're like, don't do it. There's also a lot of limitations of the study. So it was conducted by the University of Melbourne and the Murdoch Children's Research Institute in Australia. They used Twitter and Facebook posts to promote the study. So it limited to just the people who saw their post. The vast majority of the respondents were from the United States, Australia, Canada, and the UK, and 87% were white with some amount of college education. So we talking about a very limited pool of people. Mm-hmm. The survey questions also assumed that germline editing is safe and effective, neither of which have been decisively proven at all. In a study first reported by 1-0, and this is the same publication that did this article, in June, UK researchers found that CRISPR caused accidental DNA damage when used in embryos, and that mutations could cause genetic disorders or cancer in babies whose genomes have been edited before birth. And they didn't give that information to the participants. They also didn't mention alternatives to germline editing. So there's pre-implantation genetic testing. So parents who are worried about passing on genetic disease to their children can currently opt for this type of testing to screen their embryos for certain conditions before going in for IVF or in vitro fertilization. They can choose to only use healthy embryos to establish a pregnancy. And then there's also gene therapy, which is a one-time lasting treatment for a number of intractable diseases. So you don't have to go straight to chopping up some DNA. There's definitely things that are practical and that can be used now. And even with the study engaging public opinion, germline editing isn't likely to happen anytime soon in the United States, because there's a ban on it, on gene editing babies, that was passed by Congress in December 2015. More than 24 other countries have laws that directly or indirectly prohibit gene edited babies, but there are no agreed upon international rules. So it's big up in debate. Nobody really has an idea what they want to do for it. Two international committees are contemplating how germline editing might be done safely and ethically and plan to issue recommendations on regulating the technique later this year or in 2021. And while the recent survey isn't definitive, the authors say that findings indicate a blanket ban may be too restrictive. Instead of being for or against germline editing altogether, people should have a more nuanced view on technology depending on its particular use. For me, I'm supportive of germline editing or CRISPR as a surface level, but reading this and kind of seeing the different applications and just thinking about like the world now and how power works in general, I can see it being like the idea of potentially expanding on human life or making it better, or these diseases that people are plagued with, kind of eliminating that for future generations. But I just, that's one tiny seed or grain of sand in a sea of just like, okay, this could be something where only upper class people have it because it's going to be expensive, or it's an instrument of power where it's just like, oh, you want to be cured of this, you got to do this, this, and this. A black market for it. Who even fucking knows? So it's just like every time I have these exciting advances or I think, man, this is going to be great for us, I just think about what humans do and like what's going to happen, and it's just not going to be. And also like the vanity of it, like, okay, so we're gonna have like a whole bunch of blue-eyed blonde babies everywhere, and it's like, that's, what about people who aren't born that way, all that type of stuff, more discrimination, blah blah blah. But I want to know what you guys think, because the, and also, why do you think men specifically want this? But I think we know, but either way, what
they
do you guys
garbage
think about it?
They some garbage. They rhyme with cabbage. They're garbage. I want to recommend, if anybody's interested in learning a little bit more about CRISPR, a documentary called Human Nature, which I watched at South by Southwest last year, and that's a good intro to learning more about what CRISPR is. If you want to dive deeper into Rodeca's deep dive, thank you for explaining that to us. My personal thoughts on gene line editing are similar to yours in that I don't think that we as a society are ready for that. And I think that for two reasons. One, society is mad fucked up, right? So everything is a tool. That's not true, but
I just said, straight up, I
am a tool. Many things are tools, and science gives us a lot of tools, and technology gives us a lot of tools. CRISPR is a scientific technology. I don't ever think that the tool is bad. So, like, I don't think the internet is bad or anything like that. But I think that things can be used to do harm, and they usually are used to do harm because of the society and the systems that we live under. So, like, yeah, and me and Nakua talked about this a little bit with the interlocking genitals thing. You can't remove society from the tool. So, like, if a tool exists that can change people in any way, and racism and sexism and ableism exists, people are going to use those tools in racist, sexist, ableist, etc. ways. And you can't ever eliminate that from that. So one, that's why I don't think that we're ready. But realistically, are we going to dismantle said systems before this technology catches up and people want to use it? Probably not. So the second more tangible way that I think that we're not ready, but that we can be ready, which I also don't have much faith in because the world is ending in 50 years, as I say on most episodes of this show. But my ideal world would be to have things like this, like not only studies and surveys, but just like open town halls everywhere in the fucking world where CRISPR can be used, which is literally anywhere in the world. Hopefully, or ideally conducted by scientific outlets, so like labs and things like that, or people who just like donate to the advancement of science, holding like town hall meetings where people can just discuss their concerns about potentially one of the most life-changing technologies in the course of human history, so that everybody can voice their concerns and that can shape how the technology is used going forward, as opposed to people in the institution of science dictating how the technology is used going forward. So I think like in the past couple of years, science has become more integrated in regards to voices of Black people and Indigenous people and things like that. But it's not nearly where it needs to be. And if it continues being the people who are traditionally in power, that's going to shape how the technology is used, whether they know that it's biased or not. So in my ideal world, we would be having, which is like why I'm always like, let's talk about robots right the fuck now. Not only because I'm a nerd and I think that they're cool, but I think like if these things are coming, then we should like talk about it frequently so we can kind of shape the direction where it's going, as opposed to just like being handed a new iPhone and being like, oh shit, this exists. What do we do with this? So that is my ideal trajectory, or my ideal and realistic trajectory for where we'd have the conversation about germline editing going forward, or germline editing going forward, rather. Am I in support of it? I don't know yet.
All of that of which Sam has just said, but also, like, yeah, when I hear about, like, gene editing, I, you know, my mind all jumps to, you know, ableist use and racist use and things like that. But I, in listening to Sam talk, I also kind of thought, you know, yes, we can use, say we're using it positively, you know, to address all of these diseases. How are we going to, as a society, address the disparities of these diseases? You know, like, there is societal things that are happening that make it more likely for certain races to be exposed and to acquire certain diseases. How is that going to address that as well? Like, is this just going to be a genetic band-aid that we try to put over that? Because no, that's not going to work. And, you know, it leads to all these things of like classism and who can afford it and, you know, all of that. I'm not in support of it. I don't like the idea of makeshift babies. It's always rubbed me the wrong way. And I feel like there's just a lot of questions and a lot of work that we need to do socially before we could be even ready for anything like that.
And when I heard you talking just now, it just reminded me of a Black Mirror episode. I think it's Men Against Fire, where, like, it's a dude who's, like, basically killing people who are considered genetically inferior or, like, carrying certain diseases. And, like, the military is, like, weaponizing their people and, like, killing people who they use this technology to make them look like animals or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I just thought about it. I was like, well, there's gonna be a time where the future generations are going to be, if it gets to that point, like, genetically altered. But there's gonna be a time where there's people here who have these diseases in them and they can't afford this technology. What are people gonna do? Like, you know, that's when the whole upper class thing, if people can't afford it, are they now going to be shuttled somewhere else? Are they going to be considered like outcasts and they have to live on another island? There's so many things that, like, if it was a perfect world, yes, but we live in the least perfect world and it's the only one that exists. So it's just like, it is. So it's just like, on paper, sure, but once something gets into, like you were saying with the tool, you can't blame the gun, but once it gets into somebody's hands, it's just, it becomes an extension of whatever that person's intentions are. And that's where it's a scary thought. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would also like to recommend, it's not about CRISPR specifically, but if anybody's ever read the Xenogenesis series by Octavia Butler, which was then renamed Lilith's Brood series, but I don't say that because Lilith is a really hard name to say. But that is all about
because Lilith is a hard name to say.
It is. I just started saying
That is a series of novels all about the end of the world. My fave time, bro. The time that we living in. But it's all about the end of the world and a species of intergalactic aliens who can gene edit, who come to Earth and start tinkering with humans. Wow. So, yeah. If you want to get into your Afro-futuristic bag. Yeah. But cool. Why do men do it? Point.
Why do men?
No, ooh, I know. We answered it in one thing.
We did, though. It's like aesthetics, it's vanity, it's just bullshit. Whatever.
Yeah, I think society teaches, we live in a society, but society teaches men that it's okay to have less empathy, and teaches women that you have to have empathy. And I think you have to have some level of empathy to consider all of the things that we've considered. And if you're an inconsiderate motherfucker, you're not going to consider many of the things that we just said, because you want to have the next LeBron.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that all gene edited baby. You said like blonde hair, blue eyes. I think that's Hitler's gene edited babies. I think that gene edited babies would be like some Kylie Jenner ass motherfuckers. Like, we're gonna get
perfect, you're right.
Like light brown, and we're gonna get like yakky textured hair with the thinnest nose and the plumpest
and the
lips,
the biggest ass you've ever seen.
I mean, hopefully gene editing can figure out the ant body though. can we get some hips? Though? Oh my god! Can we get some hips and some thighs? Sorry, guys. Anyway. Hashtag no surgery shaming, though.
No, 100%.
Let's end the show. For everybody just cancels me, like all facets of people. Like, straight I look like that. Okay, well, if this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively move you in any sense, please leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We did not do listener letters this week, but feel free to write into ihupodcast@gmail.com with your hoetails, rant against the white cishet patriarchy, or any other thoughts that you have. Once again, that is ihupodcast@gmail.com, and you can also leave a voicemail at 404-491-9158. Both of those contact points will be in the show notes.
And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inner Hall Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inner Hall Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can check out our Facebook group by searching Inner Hall Uprising, CUMMUNITY. Head to innerhalluprising.com to sign up for our weekly goodies via our newsletter, pay a ho, or check out merchandise. And if you would like to follow me personally, Rodeca, sometimes Rebecca, you can at the Darkest Timeline on Instagram and Exist in Crisis on
Twitter.
It's
never Rebecca. That's not on your birth certificate. Stop lying.
It's not there. I'm sorry, y'all. It's always Rebecca.
You guys can follow me, Akua, at Hey Akua Girl on Instagram.
And I am Slam Rid on Instagram and Twitter, and Carmen San Diego on Instagram for travel and food photos. Everybody, have a lovely ass week, because you motherfucking deserve to.